Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Thank you, Mr. Christopher Fritchie and the gentlemen of the bland. The bland. Not bland at all, the band. Good morning, beautiful people of the center. This month, we're talking about having respect in our consciousness for other nations and other people. You know, all the people who are other. And we talked last week about tolerance is not enough for those of us who are on a spiritual path. We've got to do better than that. And this week, we're talking about the role that blessing plays in expanding our hearts and consciousness as we develop respect for others, including for ourselves. So, what is a blessing? What does it mean to bless something or to bless someone? That's the question. And if you look up in the dictionary, it'll say something like, it is to confer holiness upon, you know, to make something holy. Well, that definition is not going to work for us in our teaching at the center where we teach the science of mind, because we start from the premise that everything is holy already. Life is sacred. That's where we start. So you and I, we can't make something holy when it already is. Holy to us means whole, innocent. It's the foundation of spiritual reality. So what do we mean when we say, I bless you, or I bless that? Maybe it could mean this. It means, I see you the way you were created. I see you in your truth. It means, I recognize what is already true about you, no matter what it looks like, no matter what you say, no matter what you're doing. Even if I disagree, even if I don't like it at all, I am committed to seeing your wholeness no matter what. No matter what you're going through, that's a blessing. So, I bless you. Changes me. Does nothing to you. We just heard Chris sing that beautiful song by Irving Berlin, Count Your Blessings Instead of Sheep. And it reminds me of a really wonderful practical application of blessing work. At the end of the day, and I often use this, you can, in your bed even, for a moment, think of who was the last person I engaged with. It could be your spouse, partner, neighbor, friend. Could be somebody at work. And then you bring that person's awareness into your mind, and you simply say silently, John, for example, I love you, I bless you, and I set you free from all expectations. Then you go to the person before that you dealt with. Maybe it's a neighbor, and you say, Joan, I love you, I bless you, and I set you free from all expectations. And you keep on going back through the day. Oh my goodness, you'll fall asleep counting your blessings, and you'll start to develop this terrific relationship with the people in your world, even the ones you have problems with, because you will be having a secret love affair with them, and they won't even know. It's beautiful. This practice calls me back to the awareness of holiness in life, no matter how things appear to be. Oh, that should be our mantra these days in this world. No matter how things appear to be, I know there is a spiritual wholeness in everything. No matter how things appear to be, because things can appear to be everything, anything, disturbing, discordant, disastrous, distasteful, dangerous. And we have to face it. We have to face life and its facts, and we have to deal with it, and we've got to do what we must do. While at the same time, as students of truth, we could be saying silently, I bless this. I bless you. I'm going to the best of my ability, drop fear, stress, and judgment, because I'm committed to seeing the wholeness there, no matter how things appear to be. You know that the beautiful prayer that was spoken this morning by Laura, who she's a licensed prayer practitioner. That's one of the trainings we offer people over here. Anybody can do it. It's a lovely 2-year course. And we train people over there to see clients. They act like spiritual coaches. Now, here's the thing. There you are, you're training, and you've become a practitioner. And whoever comes to you as a client, your job as a practitioner is to see their truth, no matter how they appear to be. That's a blessing. So in the training, we talk about this thing. The world of appearances. It's a phrase we use. We talk about it so that we can remind ourselves not to become hypnotized by the way things appear to be. Because don't you know, when I focus only on appearances, then my attention flows where, let me say that differently, my energy flows where my attention goes. There, you got it? You got that one? My energy flows where my attention goes. You know, I had a really good experience of this in my training for the AIDS life cycle team for the center. We cycled from San Francisco to Los Angeles. I'm doing it again next year. I'm so excited. And I was just remembering how in the beginning I had to really learn how to ride that bike safely. One of the first things I had to learn was how to pass another cyclist safely on a busy road. If they were going slow and I wanted to get past them, you can't just go. First thing you got to do is you have to look over your left shoulder to make sure it's safe to pass. But don't you know, as a beginner cyclist, what happens? You look over and your whole bike swerves in the direction you are looking into the traffic. That can be dangerous. So you have to be careful to stay on the path. You get it? Because energy flows where your attention goes. You have to keep your attention on the path you want to be on, even if you have to look elsewhere. That's what a blessing means. You know, it means I may look at that, but I know where I'm going. Question. Where do you go when you read the news? Do you swerve dangerously into the traffic? Where do you go? When you have a conversation with your partner or your neighbor or someone, with someone who has a different politic or religion, where do you go? When you are told that you're less than, you don't belong, and you shouldn't exist, do you swerve into the traffic? To bless means I will not be hypnotized, discouraged, or distracted by the way things appear to be. I will look at the world and I will do my duty in the world, but I'm staying on the path of truth and beauty and peace and love no matter what. You can't get me off that path. So back to the prayer practitioner training. Oh, what a wonderful training. Anybody can do it. Find out about it. It is life-changing. So there you are. You complete the training. Now you're all licensed to pray, right? You're ready. And so there comes your first client. And they start to tell you their story. And you're listening. And you realize it's not something you want to hear. And you're listening and you realize, this is not anything I agree with. And as it goes on, you realize, this is not something I respect or want for myself. And then you realize, oops, I've swerved off the path of truth. And in that moment, I'm no longer a blessing for that person. One of the questions we ask clients in training is, who would be a the questions we ask the practitioners in the training is, who would be a challenging client for you? Who's the person you don't want to work with? A thief? A felon? A cheater? A child molester? Because don't you know, that's the person who's coming to see you. That's the way of the universe. They're on the way. They're coming. And as a spiritual practitioner of prayer, we don't have the luxury of discriminating against people because we don't like their politics or their religion or their history or their opinions, or their gender, or their sexuality, or their ethnicity, or their crimes, or their obsessions, or their preferences, or their confusion. Life is like that, you know, complicated, despite how I think it should show up. I have opinions about how you should be. It's not useful. I mean, think about our nation. Roughly half of our nation thinks things should go this way. And the other half thinks things should go that way. And holiness doesn't mean 50%. So what are we to do? Well, we better learn to bless each other and not curse each other. Because when 50% is in power, the other isn't. And then it changes, and then it changes, and then it changes, and then it changes. It's been a long time since I read to you. I have something to read to you. It should have a warning. This may be disturbing. Are you ready? It's by Alberto Hazan. He's an emergency room physician, author of Dr. Vigilante. What I found most disturbing about the man's arm was not the deep laceration on the underside of his bicep. It was the swastika tattoo next to it. "Sir," I said, "we'll have you fixed up in no time. I'm going to numb up the wound, irrigate it, and then repair the laceration with sutures and send you home on antibiotics and pain medication. The nurse will update your tetanus shot too. But before I start, I need to point out that I find your tattoo offensive." He seemed surprised and somewhat startled. "Excuse me?" I said, "I find your tattoo offensive," I repeated matter-of-factly. The man leapt up from the stretcher like a bear being woken up prematurely from hibernation and stood in front of me. He was 6'4", 250 pounds of solid muscle. He was a construction worker and had cut himself on the job while transferring a large steel pipe from his truck to the building he was working on. Staring into the man's eyes, I felt my heart pounding against my chest. He towered over me by 5 inches. His neck veins were distended and his eyes bugged. "You're a doctor," he said. "You're not supposed to tell me that." Despite my inner turmoil, my voice was calm. "Sir, you obviously have chosen to exercise your freedom of speech by getting that swastika tattoo on your arm. I'm exercising my own freedom of speech by letting you know that I'm disgusted by your tattoo." The man held his gaze on me. The whites of his eyes had turned the same beet red as his face, every visible muscle tense. But still, he didn't move an inch, and neither did I. While the man contemplated his next move, I prepared myself for the inevitable. I tried to preempt his attack. I was too close for him to kick me, so I surmised he would strike me with one of his bulging arms. In the end, there was no blow. The man just stared at me in anger for a few moments, then picked up his jacket and stormed out of the emergency department. My head was a jumble of thoughts and emotions. I sat at my desk for several minutes, a single question turning over in my mind. Was it wrong for me to voice my opinion? There is no doubt that what I'd done was stupid, potentially dangerous. I live in Nevada, where many people choose to exercise their right to carry a concealed weapon. And anyone supporting a swastika probably, well, the man could have easily waited for me in the parking lot after my shift and shoot me dead if he wanted to. Still, the issue for me was not whether I had made a wise decision by telling the patient how I felt about his hate symbol, but whether I had a right to do it in the first place. Although part of me didn't want to treat him, the law is clear about the issue. As an ER doctor, I am mandated to see anyone who walks through the emergency department doors requesting to see a physician. I'm also obligated to use my clinical skills to stabilize and treat anyone requiring immediate medical attention, no matter the patient's race, color, gender, sexual orientation, or political affiliation. This goes for anyone, including those patients promoting the torture and death of blacks, homosexuals, Jews, and immigrants. It's easy to put aside my disapproval for these people during critical situations. If a neo-Nazi were having a heart attack or stroke, or if he presented with a knife sticking out of the side of his head, I would treat him without hesitation and keep my opinions to myself. My first experience dealing with discriminatory behavior in the emergency department happened when I was an intern treating a belligerent drunk with a right periorbital laceration. When I approached the patient, he swung at me and landed a hard punch on my abdomen, knocked the wind out of me, and then he called me a dirty Jew. I'm still not sure why he happened to pick on that aspect of my identity, since I'm Venezuelan by birth, French, Moroccan, and Spanish by ethnicity, and American by nationality. A small part of me wanted to suture his lips together. But I decided to take the higher path. After sedating him, I made my best attempt at a plastics quality laceration repair. Now, most emergency physicians have witnessed racism in the workplace, whether it's directed at them or another staff member. And sadly, racist patients aren't the worst we treat. In my short career, I've had to care for a drunk driver who's killed the father of two infant girls, a father who'd repeatedly raped his daughter, a man who'd thrown his girlfriend down the stairs, and then had been transported to the ER by police because of a small cut on his thumb. I know from my years in the emergency department that many of my colleagues choose to deal with the anger elicited by these patients by practicing passive-aggressive or punitive medicine. And then he goes to give examples that I don't care to share with you. I understand this response. How can we as physicians not want to fight back, or at least voice our opinions, whenever we hear about the deplorable things done by some of our patients? I can't say I've ever resorted to passive-aggressive or punitive medicine. There is no place for that kind of behavior in emergency rooms, even when treating racists like neo-Nazis or rapists or murderers or child molesters. or wife beaters. The issue at stake is not whether I should have the right to treat a psychopath, but whether it is appropriate to express my opinion about a patient's actions or beliefs in the clinical setting. I felt compelled at the time to tell the neo-Nazi how I felt because I chose that day not to be apathetic. I didn't want to remain silent. I wanted to express my anger at the man sporting the symbol of hatred, and to do so not by, providing him with less than adequate care, but by speaking my mind directly. In retrospect, though, I understand now that voicing my personal beliefs in that situation or in any other may not always be the right course of action. As physicians, we are supposed to put our personal opinions aside and treat anyone requiring medical attention to the best of our abilities. As difficult as it is to separate emotion, we ultimately choose how we react. Therefore, we must be mindful of our emotion reactions and do everything possible not to act out of anger. We need to be on a higher plane. And sometimes that means ignoring the beliefs and behaviors of our patients as we treat them. We all have our own biases. And patients don't come to us for judgment. They come to us for care. We are supposed to transcend the ignorance present in everyday life and provide quality medical care to anyone seeking treatment. That's why I was deeply saddened to hear about the story last summer of the Belgian physician who refused to treat a woman with a rib fracture because she was Jewish and who suggested she visit Gaza to get rid of the pain. There is no excuse for that type of conduct from a physician, or from anyone, for that matter. There is no place for passive-aggressive or punitive medicine. My recent experience with a neo-Nazi highlights the importance of keeping personal beliefs out of the realm of medicine. Physicians, professional prayer practitioners, humans, should rise above ignorance. We should be held to a different standard because people's lives are literally in our hands. While we are in the hospital, we shouldn't express any of our political or personal beliefs, not to each other and certainly not to our patients. That's what blogs are for. Oh, there's so much for us to learn from that. I don't have to agree with you to bless you. Remember that blessing practice in the evening. John, if you can't say I love you, I see you, I bless you, and I set you free from my opinions. Or remember the teaching, the Buddhist teaching from the Dhammapada, verse 5. Hatred does not cease through hatred at any time. Hatred ceases by love. This is an unalterable law. And let's go back also to that statement, that lovely statement. Energy flows where my attention goes. We can connect it all together. Maybe you've had the experience that I've had. Have you ever been on the internet and you spotted an ad? I did once. It was an ad for underwear. Clicked it. You know what happens next. Suddenly your newsreel and your email and the whole world is filled up with ads for more underwear because apparently that's all you ever want to know about. It's actually an example of how consciousness works, you know. You know, these days we've got Alexa and the Google Assistant and Hey Siri listening all the time.
I only listen when you're talking to me.
Yeah. Sure. Of course. That's why ads for things show up that I never ever searched for. Mm-hmm. Listening all the time, like the universe. And then we speak the thoughts that come from our hearts and our feeling. They listen and then start showing to us more of what we are interested in. Oh, it's like the universe works. So if I want a different newsreel on Facebook or in life, maybe one of the small actions I can take is to become interested in what I want more of. I want to end with some advice from Megan Phelps Roper. She's a former member of the Westboro Baptist Church. Her grandfather was the founder of the church, and she left the church with her sister and now lobbies for overcoming the division between politics and religion. Because we still have to be in the world, even while we're blessing everything, we still have to talk to each other. And not all of us are physicians, and not all of us are bound by the same laws, not all of us are prayer practitioners, so we still have to engage with each other. Maybe this advice can be useful. The first piece she gives to us is to don't assume bad intent. Wow. Because it turns people off. It actually turns us off. Turns our heart off, stops us from truly listening or trying to understand why a person got to where they are. And she says, when we assume bad intent, we forget that people are human with a lifetime of experience that shaped them to where they are. So try, she says, to assume a good or at least a neutral intent. If you're a student of science of mind at the center, we have to do better than that. We have to assume as best as we can that the starting point is the sacredness of all life in the person we're talking to. And while we're talking, to say silently to ourselves, I love you, I bless you, and I set you free from all expectations. The second bit of advice she gives is to ask questions because it helps people feel like they're being heard. It can help us understand where they're coming from. It can also give the other person an unhurried chance to point out the flaws in our own point of view. It shows that we are open to be introduced to a different way of seeing things. And even as you're asking the question, to say to yourself about the person, I love you, I bless you, and I set you free from all expectations. And the third is to stay calm. Oh, this takes practice and patience, but it is powerful. And one of the most useful pieces of information I learned is to trust silence. Take breaks without ending the dialogue. And in those moments when you feel your own frustration rising, say to yourself, I love you, I bless you, and I set you free from all expectations. And the final part, make the argument, she says. And what that means is, instead of assuming that everybody already agrees with you or should agree with you or understands why it is that what you think is so perfectly true and correct, explain how you got there, why you think the way you think, even if you don't end up agreeing with the other 50% of the world. And in that conversation, try to remember to say to yourself silently about both of you, I love you, I bless you, and I set you free from all expectations. These are excellent skills to stay on the path and not veer off into the traffic, not only with people who have arrived at extremely different conclusions than you have, but with people who are close to you, your loved ones, your work team, your children. Let's take a moment to pray together. I invite you to breathe in and to exhale into a moment of quiet contemplation. breathing into this moment, I call it sacred, I let myself become aware of the presence of the all good. I feel it as a holiness, a divine presence, the truth that is permanent, the field of infinite possibility, a divine energy that is available to all. I feel blessed to experience myself as part of this divinity. I remind myself there can be no separation between my spirit and the spirit of the Most High, if it is all that there is and everywhere present. Then I know to be true about me is that I am connected to the truth, to the love, to the peace that is the one spirit. And this I hold to be true for all beings. The loving energy generated by this consciousness allows me to realize that I am love, that we are love. It fills me up with an awareness of possibilities for me and through me for this world. And so as I go out to meet the day, I'm tuned into ways to help, how to bring light, things I may share, new ideas, the remembrance of harmony. It is as if the presence of the divine is shining brightly in my consciousness. I know it always has, but in this moment, I feel it even more brighter. I imagine it as a light that is emanating from the center of my being, encircling all people and beings. I know the light was always there, but today, I'm aware of it. And through it, I understand. We are blessed. I'm detecting a soulful feeling of gratitude in me. I feel it every time I speak words of prayer in spiritual mind treatment. I feel grateful to know these words are alive in me. And I know I can carry this gratitude with me wherever I go, that it touches everyone I encounter. It is an increasing circle of love. And so I let myself enjoy this moment of rejoicing. There is the divine presence, and there is divine law, one and the same thing. And I understand that as I speak and feel these words of prayer, divine law is listening in on me, ready to fill my newsreel with more of what I am interested in. I rejoice in that. And gently bring my spiritual mind treatment to a close by saying, and so it is. I invite you to take a deep breath, deeper than the one before, and to sigh. The movement of the breath is how we make a transition from one part of our service to our next spiritual practice, the practice of circulation, which is how we participate in sharing our good, but it is also how we receive our good. I like to remind myself when I give to remember the ways that I receive too. The law of circulation is also the practice of appreciation, which we've been doing today, and that is the blessing of people and things in our lives. So that's why the words we use in our gift giving time are so important to me. You know them already. I invite the ushers to stand while you prepare your gift. And if you gave electronically, won't you please place your hand on your heart as a symbol of your heart connection to the giving and say after me, I bless this gift.
I bless this
gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It does amazing work in the world. And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.